I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello Ramblers, Andy here. Welcome to the latest Ramble Meets, where I'm very pleased to say my guest is Jon Dahl Thomason. Of course, many of you will remember him from his difficult spell at Newcastle United, but he's just had such an incredible career since then. European trophies at Feyenoord, Milan, played in Germany, played in Spain as well before finishing off his career at Feyenoord. And having been the assistant manager for Denmark for a number of years, he's hopped over the bridge, capital T, capital B, and he's now the coach of Malmö, where he became a title-winning coach, winning the Allsvenskan just this year. So we talked about all those things. Yes, Newcastle United fans, we did fit in a little bit of that, and it was a good growth experience for him. But he's lots of other tales to tell from his very cosmopolitan career. So I hope you enjoy the next 30 minutes. This is Ramble Meets Jon Dahl Thomason. Firstly, Jon, congratulations. You've won your first title as a coach with Malmö. How tough was that in such a weird time for football and in the world in general? I mean, it's a strange year in which to take on such a big job.
Yeah, we're very happy with the title. So first of all, thank you. But yeah, it's been an unusual season. So it's been quite a challenge, to be honest, and it's been a very tough season. But not only for Malmö, from all the clubs in the world, and especially in the league. I think we have played the most games in the league with Europe, and of course with the Swedish Cup as well. So in that way, it's been a challenge. But I think we as a club we have sorted extremely well. We have done a good job. We've been most consistent of all the teams, of course. Of course, I'm proud of winning the title 2020 in this unusual season.
I mean, it's such a big job anyway. I mean, give people an idea of who don't know Malmö that well of what a big club it is and what a big undertaking it is for you to become the coach in the first place.
Now, of course, the club is a warm club. It's a huge club. Historics, the biggest in the north. And we are up there also at the moment. Very passionate supporters. Expectations are quite high. We need to win everything. We need to win the league. We need to develop players so we can sell players. We need to play well in Europe. So in that way, it's an ambition club, but I'm also quite ambition, and we have normally we see the supporter here. The atmosphere at the stadium a very special moment. I only tried it in the beginning of the season when we played Wolfsburg in Europe. So of course we missed that the whole season in a way that's been terrible. Football, you play football for the supporters. We need those people who love the game. I love it as well, but in the end of the day, you need the supporter. So it's a massive club.
Was that one of the attractions of Malmö in the first place for you? Because, I mean, you look at some of the clubs that you played for in your career, and you look at stadiums like St. James's Park, like the Kuiper of Feyenoord. Those are really like passionate cauldrons of football. And of course, the stadium at Malmö is not quite as big, but I've been there on a European night, and it's really something else. So was that one of the things that attracted you to the club in the first place?
Yeah, I've been in the stadium a couple of times when I work for the Danish side, because of course, man, we have a couple of Danish players. So I watched those players in the stadium, and there was last season, and those nights in the European game, yeah, huge game, but also a great atmosphere. I think you compared a bit like you're saying, actually. I played myself when I was a young boy at Newcastle. The atmosphere there is great. I played a lot of years also in Feyenoord with that special stadium, the Kuip. So it's passionate people who love the club and who wants trophies.
And so having grown up as a Copenhagen boy, what did Malmö mean to you as a kid? Because for those who aren't aware, of course, it is in a different country, but it's only half an hour down the road or like across the bridge, if you like. I guess people here would be more familiar with that. So what did you know about Malmö as a city and as a football club when you were a kid?
Now, actually, what you're saying, you know, is... is another country, but so close to Denmark and so close to Copenhagen. When I lived in Denmark, of course, I knew about our neighbors, Malmö, close to Copenhagen. But I went abroad on a quite early age. I was a young boy. I was 18 when I went abroad to Holland. So it's not like that. I've been traveling a lot to Malmö because when you go abroad to play football, you know how the season is. You play football. You want to do your best. And in the holiday, you go back to the family. So in a way, I haven't been much in Malmö, but I learned the city now, of course, in this special year, you know, the crazy year. It's a lot of parks, a lot of nice old buildings as well. And even in this corona time, people they're always talking about Malmö when I go for a walk in the park here, and it's possible as well.
So did that give you almost the weird situation that we've had this year, give you a bit more time to explore and get to know it?
Yeah, you know, we in the beginning of the season, we were training, a lot of clubs, a lot of country, everything closed down. In Sweden, there was differently, especially in our area, you know, there's still a lot of distance between people where we can actually train normally. But we couldn't start the league. We could train normally. We couldn't start the league. So we had the longest preseason forever without knowing when to play a game or not. So that's a challenge when you have a big, big selection as well, because we have quality players in Malmö. So that was a bit of a challenge for the selection, for the group of players, and of course also for our staff, for me, having that long a preseason with the more or less 28 outfield players, and then the goal is as well to manage that.
So how did that work in terms of fitness? You have a lot of other countries in Europe where players have had hardly any holiday at all. I mean, you look at the small gap between the seasons in Russia, for example. That's an extreme example. But in a lot of other places, you look at Bayern Munich, who played the Champions League up until the middle of August, and then they're playing Bundesliga again a month later. I mean, how is that for you? Once you got to the end of the season, did you feel your players were in better condition?
As I said, we started quite early preseason. Normal preseason, we played Wolfsburg in Europe, and almost without having a preseason, we played three good halves out of four. They were a better side. After that, There was a couple of months with a lot of training. So we were training quite tough in that period. But we also gave some couple of days off after a period of 3 weeks training. Okay, then we had a week off. to keep the motivation, to have a bit of time with the family as well, because we actually didn't know when we were starting.
Of course, yeah. And I guess for a new coach, that's quite helpful for you to get to know your players as well, right?
Yeah, in a way it's helpful, but for a new coach, in the end of the day, you want games to see if things are working. You know, you can train and train for forever, and you can prove as well on training, but in the end of the day, it's all about the performance in the games. And you need games to see what works and what doesn't work, or not working at all. So we started actually without playing any preseason game. We just started. So, and I think we had a rough start as well in the beginning, because yeah, we hadn't played games and a new way of football, a new way football style, new principles. So, but we managed quite well. I think we have had a great season.
So what are your principles in terms of the way you want the team to play?
We want to play a game, possession game, but not playing possession just to play possession towards a goal. We want to press high. We want to be flexible in our approach to games. Play when we win ball, play towards the goal immediately. And of course, also lose when we lose the ball, more or less a quick reaction of the players. And I think if you look at our game style during the season, we have improved a lot on all those points, scoring the most goals in the league. Conceded the less goals as well, playing towards the penalty area from the opponent. We're trying to have a very free mind of possession game, more or less we have four people up front who are allowed to move in the width of the pitch and also just move where there's space towards the opponent and of course your teammates. So I think it's been a good challenge, and we also developed a couple of good youngsters as well during the season.
And when you talk about moving on and scoring so many goals this season, that must have been quite tough, because Marcus Rosenberg, of course, retired from the team last year. He had that incredible last game against Dynamo Kiev, a legend with the club. Which sort of players did you have to lean upon? Because, of course, you're not just losing a guy who's a main striker and a goal scorer and very, very combative sort of striker, but also you're losing someone who's a great experience and great calm in the dressing room.
Of course, when you lose, he was captain, and as you said, he's a legend here in the club and a great person and a great sportsman. And when you lose a player like that, who scored a lot of goals, but also the leadership, things have to settle down. You have to find new leaders in the group, and depending of the group, that can happen quicker, and sometimes it takes a bit longer. But of course, he was the main man and a big leader. This season, I chose Anders Christiansen as captain. I think he developed. He's a great player, but also his leadership developed during the season. He had a great season. We brought in Ole Toivonen on a late stage. He was not totally fit in the beginning, but I just put him. I put him more or less in the team without that he was fit, just to get minutes, and knew the quality of him, of course. And then we had Anil as a central defender who improved a lot. He's played, I think, last season. He was on loan in Denmark. He played one game in Allsvenskan before, and he played all the games for me, more or less. Developed really, really well. But in the end of the day, it's all about winning games. And I think we won the league in a very, very demanding way, to be dominant with the ball, without the ball. I think we had a quite good European campaign. We didn't win against Granada. We won the three first games in Europe, scoring 9 goals, conceding 0. And then we played Granada at home without our supporters. Of course, I think if you look at the players, they are better players. But we had a good performance, and we actually had more chances to score and win that game against Granada. So imagine if you had a totally packed stadium playing that game. You experienced one of those nights. Maybe the result would have been different. In the end of the day, we lost 1-3. They scored the last goal in the end of the game. We had five shots on goal. They had 3, and they scored 3 goals. Quality, that's the difference with quality. And I can see in Europe they do well. at the moment as well. I think they're number one in that group in Europe.
Yeah. And of course, when you came to this job, it wasn't like you were coming in completely blind, because you were the assistant to Åge Hareide before with Denmark. He's a previous coach of Malmö. What did he tell you about the club before you arrived, and was he able to give you some helpful steers?
Yeah, he loved the club as well. He did well at the club, and as I said in the beginning, I was there to watch players actually last season, and I felt the atmosphere. I felt the atmosphere, and he loved the club, and he won the championship as well with the club. Did well. Me and Åge, we have spoken a lot about Malmö during the years. We worked more or less almost 4 years together with the national team. So he told a lot of good stories about the club, and I can assure you, it's a massive club, it's a big club, but still it's a warm club, good people.
I mean, really, you've had a lot of great experiences from great coaches to pull down upon over the years. I mean, of course, in England, we think of you arriving at Newcastle United, and you've said before how important Kenny Dalglish was in making you come. But if you look down your CV of the coaches you played under, we've got Kenny Dalglish, Carlo Ancelotti, Leo Beenhakker at Feyenoord, Manuel Pellegrini, Trapattoni at Stuttgart, not to mention Morten Olsen and your tremendous time with the Denmark national team. So who were the guys out of that lot, which is kind of who's who of coaches, who were the ones who you took the most from, do you think?
Yeah, and actually we forgot Bert van Marwijk as well, who's been a coach from Holland.
Of course.
And did some good results. So you're right. Now, in the end of the day, you pick up stuff. I'm an open-minded person. I played in 5 different countries. So I would not really call me totally Danish, not at all. I'm European. Been in 5 different countries. Coping, adapting to 5 different cultures, then you need to be open-minded. And, of course, those names, yeah, they're great trainers, great coaches, and had won things in Europe with national teams in big leagues. Yeah, you will learn from those boys if you're open-minded, for sure.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So how do we go from Newcastle United, where
I mean, it was a difficult situation for you with an injured Shearer, Les Ferdinand having left, and basically it all piled on you as a young player. You end up at Feyenoord under Leo Benhakker, who's such an experienced coach who's done so much in the game. How did Benhakker rebuild your confidence and get you to the point where you and Van Hooijdonk have this incredible relationship? And, of course, you have that incredible UEFA Cup final at De Kuip where you beat Dortmund.
Yeah, Leo Benhakker, coach for a lot of national teams, won three titles with Real Madrid, a lot of experience, excellent in the workings, excellent with the dressing room, with the boys. He was really top class in how to say the right thing, to push the right buttons, good with the press, good as well, good with the board. That's also an important thing, of course, in a football club. So those things, I learned from him for sure. I learned a lot regarding those things. And he's also a man who's been in a lot of different countries. Actually, when I started coaching as a head coach at Excelsior, I think more or less 8 years ago, he came one time every month to have a coffee and have a chat about how things worked. So that's actually nice. He's a bit older now, so that was funny having playing as a football player, and then afterwards starting my coaching career, and then he was also there.
I mean, you talked about how Benhakker was so good at relating to players. I mean, when people talk about Ancelotti, they don't necessarily talk about tactics, even though his teams tend to play quite attacking football. They talk about the way he relates to superstars. Is that something you got from Ancelotti?
Yeah, I think as you said, I think it's spot on. In the end of the day, when you work with people, I think it's very, very important to build relationship with each other. I think I'm a big believer that people are performing better if they have a connection with you. And Ancelotti, he's the main man. He's done that in big clubs, and he's done it excellent, making those connection and the way he says things. People know exactly what he means. Maybe it's not always in a very tough way, but in the end of the day, people are for sure. Yeah, okay. They know what he means.
We always get the impression with Ancelotti that he's not a shouter. I mean, is that the case? Did he ever raise his voice, or did he never have to because he had that level of respect?
No, he had the level of respect, of course, the things he achieved as a football player, as a manager as well. But also the way he treats people, then you get respect as well. I think he's a very honest man. Clear, straight to the point. And sometimes, you know, it's not necessary to raise your voice, depending on how you are acting. I think I heard it one or two times. So when I played at Milan in those 3 years, so that's not a lot, but everybody knew exactly what he wanted. So it's about how you do things, and also about the group you have as player, of course. The way you are acting has to suit the group of players.
So obviously you achieved a lot at Feyenoord, but it must have been a big step going up to Milan. I mean, how was that? Because they were such a successful team, and they were such a seasoned group of players. You think of the sort of players who were around you at that time, you know, rubbing shoulders with the likes of Shevchenko, Maldini. I mean, how was that? Did you feel when you were at that, in the thick of that at Milan, that yeah, I've reached the pinnacle now?
At that time, we were the best in the world. I worked 3 years, played 3 years. It's a lovely, it sounds a lovely family club, you know. We were winning a lot at that time, and we had two Champions League final in 3 years' time, and won the title there. We lost, of course, that famous game against Liverpool. We're not going to start with that today.
No,
I have a good day. I have an excellent day. So we keep that for another chat. But it was 3 great years, winning titles, performing well. I was second top scorer each year in the group. Played minimum 25 games from start at the biggest club in the world at that time. And I think back with a great feeling. I love football today. I'm very passionate about football. But when I think about those 3 years, yeah, it was amazing 3 years.
So do you think you could have got there without those hard times at Newcastle, where you were basically thrown into the deep end of the pool and you're left to get on with it? As someone who has succeeded to a really good extent in Holland already before you arrived in England, but nevertheless in the Premier League and Newcastle playing Champions League, of course, then at that time as well, which seems like a million years ago now. But do you think the toughening up that you got at Newcastle helped you to succeed later on?
I think you learn a lot for a difficult situation. I was a young boy when I arrived at Newcastle, and partnering up with Shearer in the preseason, and we did really well together. Last preseason game, he got that big blow, he got the big injured, and then suddenly we were out of strikers. We had Tino Asprilla for a short while. I played as a striker. I played out of position at that time, and I was not ready to play in that position. I could play as a after striker, just behind the striker, but playing as a lonely striker at that time, I was not ready. And during the year, I learned to do that as well. So I was playing out of position at that time, but I had to think about. I had a difficult spell at Newcastle, but I learned a lot of the situation. I'm always looking a little bit regarding how is Newcastle doing as well. As many years ago. So it was a good experience, a tough experience, but at the end of the day, yeah, a footballer, you always develop during the years, and I was just a young boy playing out of position. So imagine if Shearer didn't got injured the last preseason game, I think things maybe have been differently.
But on the other hand, you might not have ended up at Milan. Everything happens for a reason, right?
And that's crazy. And that's beautiful about the game. You know, things change so quick. And in that way, it's amazing. And there's also something about football we love, you know, the passion, and things change very quickly. Football, you need to be very flexible. So I think that's also one of the reasons that I'm happy. I've been in five different countries, playing in five different countries. You need to be really flexible in this game.
Which one suited you the most, do you think? Which of those countries suited you and the way you play and actually your family and your lifestyle the most?
I think in a way, you know, the way the success in Holland, of course, success in Milan, in the end of the day, you always think about the big successes you had as a player and as a club and as a team. Then you think back on those moments, I would say those two.
And if you're talking about an individual career highlight, would you still think of that UEFA Cup final against Dortmund? Because you look at that game, not only was it an incredible game in your home stadium of De Kuip, but against a really, really great Dortmund team as well.
Yeah, it was actually my last game. I just signed a deal a couple of weeks before with Milan. I wanted to end in a great way. It was great to win that trophy, win against Dortmund at home, becoming chosen as man of the match, being important, and then going away like that. Yeah, it's like a storytelling, actually. So something I'm very proud of. And of course, it's a great achievement for final at that time. That's the last European trophy a Dutch club had won. And now we're talking about a lot of years ago. It was 2002, so that's more than 18 years ago. And now I'm here in Malmö, building a new Malmö site and building a new football style, if you compare to last season. And we're aiming for more title. So we're building a new future here in Malmö.
And how much is Europe part of that? I mean, we spoke right at the beginning about the European Nights at Malmö. They're special. I think older listeners will think of Malmö playing Nottingham Forest in the European Cup final when we go like 40 years back. So people still remember that, of course. When they play at home in the Champions League, it's pretty special. How much of a big deal is it for you to get to the Champions League?
Of course, this season we needed to win four games to go into the group phase of Europe. We won three of those. We lost then against Granada. And now it's going to be, we need to win four games before we can go into the Champions League. If you win two games, you will go into the Conference League. Do we win three games, you play European League. So it's of course it's a challenge, and you need of course a bit of luck regarding the opponent. But we are seeded, so hopefully we'll get some good opponent. We also seeded this season, but we got Granada from Spain, who had the best season ever last season, so a bit unlucky. But we are ready to write a new chapter of this great history of Malmö. And it has a great history, and during the years won a lot of title, and of course the ambition are very high here, and I love it. It gives me energy.
And as you say, you're a bit unfortunate in facing Granada, who I think have, as you say, have proved they're a really good team in Europe this season. But if you look at the way the European competitions have been a little bit reformatted, and you look at the four big leagues, their top four teams go directly in. I mean, how much of a help is that to a club like Malmö when you're trying to get in the Champions League?
Yeah, of course it's difficult. It's difficult. The big advantage is that we have done well in Europe the last year, so we got a lot of points. So that means we'll be seeded. But still, it's a long journey. You need to win four games to play Champions League and win against four opponents if we play home or away. Let's see what happens next season. So in that way, it's a huge challenge. But we have big ambition, and here in Malmö, we want to play Europe. We want to have those European nights here. That's also important for the history of the club. It's also important to develop. You need money to develop the club as well. So, and you get money in those big games.
Yeah, I suppose at this point in time as well, the money's all the more important because everyone's having to tighten their belts. But I guess the fact that the bigger clubs maybe aren't spending the amounts of money that they've spent in the past, is that more of an advantage to you? Do you think with like clever scouting and development of players from your academy, you can maybe get a little bit closer and be a little bit more competitive?
Yeah, I think we have an excellent academy here. They're working really hard to develop those youngsters. I think we already, if you compare this season with the last couple of seasons, I think the age of the group is lower, went down. We had some youngsters playing already a lot of games this season. I think that's important for a club as Malmö as well, try to develop players to be able to sell those players. There's also a way to get income, but still it's only about one thing in Malmö, it's about winning.
And that's a pressure that you don't have everywhere in Sweden, is it? I mean, I've been to see a few Swedish teams and the atmosphere around the club and the city is something else. I mean, do you feel that pressure even without the fans in the stadium?
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's always a lot of journalists who are very interesting in the club. The expectations are still high without the fans. We need to win. It's quite simple. For me, I've been used to live under those circumstances my whole life. So for me, it's energy and I love it. I can imagine don't having that pressure. Yeah, but it would be a bit boring, huh?
Yeah, I suppose it would be. Well, if we're talking about getting that pulse rate lifting a little bit, one of the most recent European highlights for Malmö was when they played the derbies against FC Copenhagen in Europe. How about some of that again? For you as a Copenhagen native, that would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
That would for sure be special. But then we need to win the leagues as well, both teams more or less, or either or qualify for Europe. But it would, yeah, there's great games. Imagine Copenhagen playing against Malmö. Yeah, two big cities, two big clubs, a lot of ambitions, and so close to each other, and two different countries.
That's great, John. Thanks so much for your help. Thanks so much for your time, and best of luck for the next one.
Thank you a lot and all the best. Huh? Take care.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.